Okay, this week's parsha is Parshas Bamidbar. Happens to be my bar mitzvah parsha. So we always read Parshas Bamidbar before Shavuos. But even though it happens to be that we always read Parshas Bamidbar before Shavuos, the Gemara Megillah Daf Lamed Aleph associates a parsha with Shavuos, but it's not Parshas Bamidbar that the Gemara associates with Shavuos. The Gemara relates that Shavuos not to this week's parsha, but to last week's parsha. The Gemara says that Ezra Tikkun and Yisrael Shiu Koren Klolos Shabbataras Kohanim Kodem Atzeres, that we're supposed to read the Tochacha in at the end of Ayikra prior to Shavuos, V'shem Mishnah Torah Kodem Rosh Hashanah, and the Tochacha in Sefer Devarim prior to Rosh Hashanah, Kisava prior to Rosh Hashanah, Kedei Shetichla Hashanah V'Kilo Seha. And both of these, the proximity of the Tochacha before Shavuos, as well as the proximity of the Tochacha before Rosh Hashanah, both represent Kedei Shetichla Hashanah V'Kilo Seha, that it's a simin that the year and all of its klolos should end. So the Gemara, frak the Gemara, Atu Atzeres Rosh Hashanah. What are you talking about? That makes sense when you're talking about the Tochacha and Sefer Devarim, because it's Taka Rosh Hashanah. But Shavuos is not a Rosh Hashanah. Says we're in Atzeres Nami Rosh Hashanah. It's not about Atzeres Al Pei Rosh Ilan. Atzeres is one of the Rosh Hashanah. It is a Rosh Hashanah. It may not be the Rosh Hashanah, but it is a Rosh Hashanah. So Tosfos on the spot deals with the issue that if we really wanted to connect the Chukosai with Shavuos, then maybe there shouldn't always be a parsha in between, especially a long one. I mean, Bamidbar, I know it's my bar mitzvah parsha. It's a long one, right? In between the Tochacha and Shavuos. Why would we interrupt in the middle, in between the two of them, with another parsha? However, the Shulchan Aruch, even despite the fact that there's a Gemara that directly associates last week's parsha with Shavuos, in Shulchan Aruch, there is a direct link between Bamidbar and Shavuos. The Shulchan Aruch in Simen Tav Chav Ches Siv Dalid gives a simen to the juxtaposition of Bamidbar and Shavuos. Manuva Atzru, that you count, meaning numbers, you start the census of Sefer Bamidbar, and then Vitzru, and then you celebrate Atzeres. So if the Shulchan Aruch is making a mnemonic or a simen ledavar that Bamidbar is juxtaposed with Shavuos, it gives you the impression that there's some sort of link between Bamidbar and Shavuos, that there's some sort of connection, so much so that apparently it overrides the connection that's explicitly in the Gemara about B'chukosai and Shavuos. So what exactly is that connection between Bamidbar and Shavuos, and particularly this year where it's mamish right on the heels of Shavuos, it's mamish on Erev Shavuos that we're going to be reading Bamidbar. Second of all, in the beginning of Parshas Bamidbar, Moshe Rabbeinu was told, "Su'u esrosh kol hadas b'nei Yisrael l'mishpachosam leves avosam b'mispar shemos." And the Ramban writes that it wasn't enough for Moshe to ask each head of a family to how many family members they had, and then just add the total. He couldn't just go to the Zaydi in each family and say, how many Enoklech do you have? And, you know, they could say, you know, some grandparents don't like to say how many grandchildren they have. They're afraid of Ayin Hara. So, okay, so he could say, you know, one more than 35, Kanayin Hara, poo, whatever. You know, okay, do whatever you want to do. But you can get the message across to Moshe Rabbeinu. But he wasn't allowed to do that. He wasn't allowed to go to the head of each family and just ask for a number and then total the numbers. He had to actually, personally meet every individual, says the Ramban. Now that is a tedious and miraculous task to perform. It would be impossible without a miracle. Can you imagine meeting 600,000 people? How do you give FaceTime to 600,000 people? We conduct interviews on the way into the Smicha program. Sometimes, like, I feel like it's overwhelming. What is it? 50 people a year, maybe, right, in a whole year, and here he had to meet 600,000 people, and he was a busy person. So why would it be that Hashem would trouble Moshe Rabbeinu in this way? And if the idea is to count the people also, the phrase that's used, su'u es rosh, to lift up their heads, what does that represent? And then a third question. Someone came over to me in my shul last year, and he asked me, how is it possible that the numbers of every single shevet happens to be a round number? Meaning when they do the census of every single shevet, every single one happens to come out to be a round number. with only one exception, just the B'nai Gad, everyone is a perfectly round number, and even B'nai Gad was 45,650. So it's rounded up, it's to a 10, even though it's not to 100, right? So it's got one zero at the end instead of two zeros. It defies logic that there wouldn't be a single Shevet that has a number like, I don't know, 52,647 or something like that. Just some random number. So my immediate response was that the Torah must be rounding off. But the guy who asked me the question said, it can't be. That's the whole point of a count is that everybody counts, right? Every Dvar Torah you ever heard about, the counting of the people is because every person counts. So how could it be that in the counting of the people, not every person is going to count, and we're going to be rounding off, close enough, you know, give or take a few. You know, like I'm reminded when I was in Eretz Yisrael, in yeshiva, so I used to go to my aunt and uncle for Shabbos lots. So my uncle has siblings who each have a lot of children, and they were producing that at that time, you know, lots and lots of kids. So my aunt and uncle had only 9. I think it's the smallest family among all of my uncle's siblings. So I remember one Friday night I was there, and they said, one of the kids said to my uncle, Abba, we need to go to the Sholem Zachar. And he said, "Nah, I'll just go next year." You know, like so that you know, everyone counts. The whole point is that everyone counts. You can't just like, you know, cut some corners and just you know, round it off. So I later found that Reb Chaim Kanievsky writes in Derech Sicha that it was Taka and Nes, and the Torah is giving very precise numbers. But the Mesh Chachma says otherwise. The Mesh Chachma says that the Torah was rounding off, like my initial impression. Problem is, if the Mesh Chachma is correct, Kasha is a strong Kasha. The whole point of counting is to count everybody, and now you're going to have a count that doesn't count everybody. So I think the Yisod is as follows. There are two values expressed in counting that at first appear to be competing values, but really are not competing values at all. They are very much complementary values to each other. There is the value of the individual and the value of the group, and those are not competing values. Those are complementary values. First, let's talk about the value of the individual. Rav Moshe in Darash Moshe in Parshas Kisisa points out that for a person to motivate himself to be productive, he cannot underestimate his individual value. It's very easy for a person to say that he doesn't have to learn or to do a mitzvah because me ani, who am I anyway? What can I accomplish anyway? What am I going to be anyway? Will my mitzvah or learning really add? But when a person realizes that he's counted together with every other Jew, we don't count Talmidei Chacham as 10 people and Amei Aretz as a half a person, right? We don't have that in Klal Yisrael. When you're counting the Jews, each Jew counts as a full number. Judaism doesn't have a 3/5 compromise like the United States had in 1787. Learn your history or Google it or whatever, right? We don't have that. Everybody counts as one, no matter how great a Talmud Chacham or how not great a Talmud Chacham person is. And a person has to recognize that they have value, right? That's the Vart, the Gemara in Sota Daf Hei says that we learn the Musar from Har Sinai, that Har Sinai was the lowest of the mountains that teaches you anivus, so frekt the Velt Akasha. So why didn't God give the Torah in the Grand Canyon? I mean, if you really want to give it in a place that's low, give it in the Grand Canyon. It's really low. Why are you giving it on a low mountain? Elamai, that very same Daphin Sota says you need a Shminis to Shminis. You need a little bit of Gaiva. There needs to be a little bit of pride. I was listening to my friend Rabbi Moshe Bamberger, who's a Mashkiach in Landers, this morning on the way in. And he was saying over this, you know, the famous word about anivus, that anivus doesn't mean you're a nobody, it means that you're a somebody, but just not to be too much of a somebody, you know, an eighth of an eighth. He quoted the Chanukah Satorah, the Rebbe of Heschel. Are you right, familiar with Chanukah Satorah? No? The Chanukah Satorah is the Rebbe of Heschel was the Rebbe of the Shach. And all we have from him are like these very charifistic, like a Derech Sicha kind of sefer, like Reb Chaim Kanievsky. That's like all we have, like these very charivistic of Vartlach and Chumash. So I don't think we have anything else from him other than when the Shach quotes him from time to time. So over there he shows how Har Tavor was the other option, and Chazal tell us how high Har Tavor was, and if you do, and the Chazal tell us how high Har Sinai was, and if you do the math, it's 1/64th of the height of the other potential mountain. So it's a Shmidus to Shmidus of Gaiva that it represents Shmidus to Shmidus of Gaiva. But one of the things that I that occurred to me as I was listening to the Shir was that Rav Yosef is the Bal Meimra. right, about the Shminis to Shminis. Rav Yosef is also the one in the end of Sota, Altisni Anava Diika Ana, right? He's the one that says, don't say that Anava is batal because I'm still here. And everyone's bothered by that also. What do you mean? That doesn't sound like Anivus. And Rav Yosef is the one that is referred to in the end of Horios and elsewhere as a Sinai. Like his actual name, meaning he was called the Sinai, as opposed to Rabba was an Oker Harim, Rav Yosef was a Sinai, right? So it always bothered me that it's so strange. You want to call someone a Bucky, there's a perfectly good word, Bucky, right? That's not an English word, that's a Hebrew word. It's a perfectly good word. You want to say he knows everything, so say that he's a Bucky. He's a Sinai? Why would you call that a Sinai? You want to refer to someone as a big London, as someone who knows how to study with Amkus or whatever. So call him that. Call him a London. What do we call him? An Oker Harim. That he's an Oker Harim. So it struck me this morning as I was driving that maybe that's the difference between the two types of learning. That when someone amasses knowledge, he's building. When someone is a big London, he's dissecting and often destroying. He's ripping apart Svaras. So Rav Yosef is saying that I represent building a certain amount of pride in yourself, building up. There are two types of shiurim. Some shiurim you go to, there are more than two types of shiurim, but two general. Some shiurim you go to and you come out saying like, okay, I learned something new. So now I know this, I have this information. Other types of shiurim that's very popular in the yeshivish world is that if you come out saying that I know nothing, then it was a really great shiur. I thought I knew the sugya coming in, but now that I came out of the shiur, I realize that I know nothing and that I'm thoroughly confused. So that's oker harim, right? That it's oker the har, that it's oker any sense of accomplishment from the person. So I thought maybe Pshat in that Gemara, not Pshat, maybe Drash in that Gemara, in the end of Sota, is that they thought Batla Anava, because the definition of Anava that they were working with was the definition of zero, of nothing, of being Oker the entire Har. That was the definition of Anava. And Rav Yosef says, Al Tisni Anava, Deika Ana. That no, Anava's not gone because there's a second definition of Anava. There's an Anava of a Har Sinai. Anava doesn't have to be the Grand Canyon. Anava could be the Har Sinai. I'm a Sinai. I represent that second kind of Anava, where there is a certain sense of pride, where there is a certain sense of confidence and accomplishment. That was just a machshava I had this morning, a little bit off topic. But the point is, Ramosha tries to say that a person needs to have a sense of self-worth, and a person has to realize through the counting that we're worth as much as anybody else. In fact, while one may have thought that specifically in the realm of Torah learning, this idea of everybody being important doesn't hold true. You would think if there's one place where that's not true, it's about Talmud Torah, because after all, there are learners, there are earners, there are learner-earners, there are, you know, learner-learners, there are earner-earners, right? So yeah, you have all of these, so you would think, okay, there are people who excel in chesed, there are people who excel in learning, there are people... But it's particularly true when it comes to Torah. The Gemara in Bava Basra, Daf Chafal, tells us that Amar Rav Yudah Merav, Biram, Zecharos Hu Ish Latov, Yoshua Ben Gamla Shemo, that we should remember Yoshua Ben Gamla Latov. Why? Shel Malehu Nishtakach Torah Mi Yisrael. Without him, Torah would have been forgotten from Klal Yisrael. Shebetchila Mishli Yishloav, Malamda Torah Mishain Loav Loyela Matara. Initially, someone who had a father to teach him Torah to follow, but it says in Chumash had a father to teach son Torah, so he would learn Torah. If he didn't have a father, he didn't learn Torah. And then his kin, Then they decided to set up Malam Ditrokos in Yerushalayim. That didn't work, so they set up Malam Ditrokos b'chol yevir b'chol belach u'belach. Great, that was the great contribution of Rabbi Shimon Gamla. Frek the Marsha. I get it. I get that it was a great contribution. But isn't the Gemara over-dramatizing just a bit? Right, the Gemara says, Umalehu nishtakha Torah b'Yisrael. The Torah would be forgotten from Klal Yisrael. But the Gemara admits that before he came along, Mi sheyesh lo av, aviv melamdo Torah. That if a person had a father, the father taught him Torah. The Torah would have been forgotten from Klal Yisrael. The Torah would have been forgotten. Nebuch, terrible, terrible. It would have been forgotten from Yisomim, or from people whose fathers were Amei Aretz. Which is terrible, don't get me wrong. But isn't it a bit of an overstatement, an over-dramatization, to say Nishtakha Torah Yisrael, that it wouldn't have been forgotten from Klal Yisrael? So Daniel Stein points out in his Sefer Chamudei Daniel, that Elamai, if somebody is missing from the Beis Medrash, it affects everybody's Torah. That if there's a segment, if there's a person missing from Klal Yisrael, from the Beis Medrash, then everybody's Torah is tainted in one way or another. that my Torah learning is not going to be the same when there are other Jews who are not learning. The Torah wouldn't have been entirely forgotten, but to a certain measure, the Torah of the entirety of Klal Yisrael would have been lacking. And that's Neshach HaTorah Mi Yisrael. And Rav Stein explains, that's why the Yerushalmi in the 9th Parak of Nedarim says, V'yahavta L'reacha Kamocha, Rabbi Kiva Omer Zeh Klal Gadol BaTorah. I don't understand. V'yahavta L'reacha Kamocha Zeh Klal Gadol B'Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Why is it Zeh Klal Gadol BaTorah? It's not a Klal in Torah, it's a Klal B'Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Elamai, maybe specifically when it comes to Torah, we each have to value the learning of other Jews as much as we value our own learning. The Tshuvas Ksam Sofer and Chasher Mishpatz and Kof Samach Dalet go so far as to say that the general principle of Chayecha Kodmin doesn't apply to Talmud Torah, and one must be mevatel his own learning in order to teach others, because we have to recognize every individual has what to contribute in Talmud Torah, even if it doesn't seem that they have so much more to contribute. Every individual has what to contribute in Talmud Torah. Now, I'm reminded, I say this story all the time because I love this story. I'm reminded of the time where we invited Rav Aaron Kahn Shlita to speak in Camp Keli, and I drove him from Camp Tubby, which was where his wife spends the summer, to Camp Keli. Were you in the car with me, Mayor, when this conversation happened? So he was asking about the camp. So Camp Keli is a camp where there's what do you call it? An effusion, integration, right, of special needs campers and regular needs campers, or as Rav Judah Michelle, when he spoke at Camp Keli, said, we're all special needs. We all have special needs. But, you know, whatever they call the special needs community and the regular needs campus, that they're all integrated in the same bunks, not the same league teams, because you can't ask a kid not to try hard when he plays sports. But they tried that the first summer. It was a disaster. But in the same bunks, at least. So we were describing to him what the camp is about. So he told us, and Mayor will correct me if I'm wrong, that he remembers that he was once asked to speak at a Siyum in a special needs school, and he was looking around at the kids, and he was thinking, he first thought to himself, what are they going to accomplish in learning? What are they capable of accomplishing in learning? What could they do? Are they going to finish a Masechta of Mishnayos if they work a couple of years on it? Like, what are they going to accomplish so much in learning? And then he thought to himself, a beautiful machshava, and he shared it with us. He said that he thought to himself that the gap between him, Rav Aaron Kahn, and the special needs kids in that school is much, much smaller than the gap between him and the Vilna Gaon. The gap between him and the Vilna Gaon is enormous, he said. And would the Vilna Gaon laugh at me because I'm trying to learn Torah? Would the Vilna Gaon say that I'm wasting my time because I'm trying to learn Torah, that it's silly? What am I trying to accomplish? He said, how dare anybody say that someone's Torah accomplishments aren't meaningful? The gap is so much smaller than the gap between me and the Vilna Gaon. And everybody's Torah is important. But on the flip side, or really not on the flip side, complementary to this point, is the value of complementary to the point of the value of the individual is the value of the tzibur. Each individual is most primed to maximize his potential, his contribution to Klal Yisrael, his worth, if he realizes that he's part of something much bigger than himself. In fact, Rav Moshe Shapiro pointed out that the very term sphira, counting, really means to combine parts into a single unit. That's what the shoresh always means. A seashore is a safar because it serves as a border that surrounds a country, thereby unifying the landmass as a single entity. And it's often made up of a bunch of tiny little bits of sand that together make a beach that prevents the ocean from flooding the whole place. A sofer is a person who takes letters and words and puts them together to create a single book. A sipur is a collection of different steps and events to paint one big picture. So when we complete Sfiras HaOmer, we've hopefully created a unified Ish Echad B'Lev Echad, which in turn prepares us to receive the Torah. So you have both of these elements are critical in terms of our understanding of how Torah works. And based on that, maybe we can answer the questions that we began with. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu have to go through the arduous process of counting every individual? Why is it worth Hashem making a miracle to enable that to happen? Because it's to demonstrate that every individual counts. Nobody is too small to merit FaceTime with Moshe Rabbeinu. And in that way, he isn't just counting, but he's uplifting people. Su'u'as Rosh. He's indicating very clearly that everybody is important enough to have a conversation at least once with Moshe Rabbeinu. We ask, why does the Torah round off the numbers? Once we've shown each individual how important they are as individuals, we emphasize the purpose of that importance. It's not to then stand out as an individual. It's then to be part of a tzibur, to be part of a round number. If you have to disappear and go unnoticed to serve the needs of the tzibur, then that's what you do. The idea is powerfully demonstrated by the Torah summing up the groups in round numbers without each individual counting in the whole. And finally, we ask what the connection is between, or initially we ask what the connection is between Bamidbar and Shavuos. And maybe it's precisely this, Manuva Atzru, when we count as we do in Bamidbar, showing the importance of each and every Jew, and that this importance is measured by the extent to which he belongs to the Tzibur, then we're prepared for Kabbalah Satorah, because our ability to accept the Torah hinges on our sense of individual responsibility and value, coupled with our sense of responsibility to the people.